Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan Sullivan. This is the show where we break down popular science into easily digestible and actionable information to give you the blueprint to be a high performer in your life. Today, I'm joined by TFD performance dietitian Loz Nash, and we are introducing you to some of the most fundamental concepts of endurance sports nutrition. We are doing that because Loz and I will be launching an in-depth series where we break down everything you need to know about performance nutrition for endurance sports. We will cover calorie intake for the different endurance sports, how to calculate your macronutrients, what macronutrients are best for your specific event, the importance of carbohydrates, how to carb load, the best fueling strategies for training and competition, the importance of having an individual hydration strategy, natural versus artificial nutrition for competition, and much, much more. So for now, enjoy Loz and I introducing some of the very basics before we take a deep dive into endurance nutrition. Let's get to it.
Oof. The TFD. I reckon we should start calling you the speedy dietitian. Hey, check out those sunnies.
Yeah, for everyone that is not watching the YouTube right now, you are missing out because Loz and I are repping our speedies, and it is in the spirit of what we're going to be talking about today. And Loz, I'll let you let everyone know what we are talking about.
Absolutely, yes. So I figured that, you know, given that you are this up-and-coming endurance athlete, I'm a wannabe CrossFit athlete that has done one sprint triathlon, you'd be the perfect guest to have on your own podcast to talk about all things endurance nutrition from a beginner level, as in you've just started, you have no idea what you're doing, like me, to the ultra endurance level. So we're going to be covering, yeah, some of the basics of endurance nutrition and the considerations that each and every one of you who are listening right now should implement to try and optimize their performance.
I don't know how I'm going to go getting through this whole podcast, because I guess I always wear these when I'm running outside, and they are awesome because they block out so much sun. But when you're doing this inside, it is so dark.
I know. I almost feel like I'm vision impaired. But you know what? The speed is going to make us get through this super fast, so that, you know, if you're just commuting from the office to the gym, you can like listen to this podcast and get some pointers out of a fast little podcast.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true. But yeah, it's a good topic because endurance sports, I think, at least since all of the athletes I've been taking on in the endurance sport, it's something I think a lot of them take for granted. Like, it really blows my mind how many endurance guys not so much don't have an idea. Like, they're all aware of they need to be doing something with their nutrition, but more so there's a lot of like fasted cardio that goes on, like fueling principles during races or even just during training. Like, how do I fuel for a shorter training session? How do I lead that up for longer ones? Like, what type of principles am I following? And I think that there's a lot of really good, even fundamental things that you can do no matter what level, even if you're just starting, like, or if you're running 10Ks and you're on a run a half marathon, or, you know, you just did your first half marathon, you want to bump that up to a full, or you want to try ultra endurance, or even if you just want to get on trails and run on the weekends, like, there's very fundamental nutrition principles that you can use that you will see a pretty significant difference. And I think, I don't know about you, Loz, but when I started, yes, absolutely, like, the conditioning is a bit of a shock to your body. The training volume can be pretty tough as well. But one of the toughest things is getting your nutrition dialed in. But it's one of those things that I felt when I started, I almost got instant return for my buck. Like, when I figured out my hydration, I figured out like my carb strategy, what felt good when, like, before the sessions, like what felt good at different increments during, even what I had to eat after. So, you know, tomorrow, if I had an absorption run or if I had something else to do in the training program, what would you eat so you're feeling good for that?
Yeah, for sure. I think there, you know, obviously there's a lot of sports out there, but I think there are a few sports where intranutrition does play such a massive kind of role in not only the event, but your performance. And I think, you know, what's also cool about endurance is, like, yeah, there is heaps of research out there and there's heaps of science. And at that top level, like, it really can become quite a numbers game. But I think, you know, for those people who are just starting out or maybe don't have a nutritionist or a dietitian on that, on their side, those numbers and kind of seeing all these recommendations, it can be really overwhelming. And I think, you know, when a nutrition recommendation is overwhelming, that's when you just disregard it. And you're like, you know, you're, screw it, I'm just going to wing it. And I feel like the first rule of endurance nutrition is you probably shouldn't wing it.
Yeah, because it's so, especially if you're doing something pretty long or anything longer than, say, 90 minutes or so. In a lot of sports, you're not really training or doing much longer than that in any aspect, even in your competition. And it's bizarre to a lot of people, hey, like, getting the food in, like, just stopping and eating during, not even stopping, like, and learning how to run and eat or swim or whatever, and get that nutrition in either during or immediately after in your transitions. It's a tough thing to get used to.
Oh, for sure. And I mean, I can, you know, this is almost embarrassing, but that first sprint triathlon that I did, I was too scared to even take my hands off the bar. So like I wasn't even drinking during the ride because I just couldn't even manage it. So obviously, you know, a sprint try, I probably didn't fuel myself properly, which we can talk about later. But, you know, getting into it as well is like, okay, not only am I exercising, but I'm also trying to eat and drink. And if you're a bit special like me and haven't yet mastered how to do the one-handed cycling, you know, you're not going to be getting anything in. So it's like, yeah, not only are you got to focus on the conditioning side, but it's, yeah, the nutrition, it's like a package, really. It's the conditioning, and I think it's the nutrition that can have a massive impact.
Yeah, absolutely. There's so many logistical things, especially when I started, like, especially with running, like, how do you maintain your breath and your stride and keep your efficiency, but still, you know, get into your hydration pack and still, like, chew and not choke, but make sure everything's still running, and then have it sit okay in your gut and mentally process all that, but not throw off your pacing. But yeah, we'll get into all that. Let's just start at the basics. What are the basics when we're talking about this?
Yeah, I mean, like, correct me if I'm wrong, but I reckon one of the first places to start could probably be training the gut to handle that intra-training nutrition.
Yeah, and what does that mean, Liz?
Yeah, so I guess, you know, you train the conditioning side, but you also train your gut in a way to be able to tolerate, you know, higher volumes of carbohydrates over a certain amount of time during exercise. So, you know, not only does this reduce the likelihood of, you know, stomach upset during training or during competition, but it can also help to improve, you know, how efficiently your body can absorb those nutrients as well, which, you know, decreased kind of gut upset and increased absorption, that's like a recipe for better performance. So it's something that, you know, you can also, yep, do your physical training, but kind of training your gut, so to speak, to be able to tolerate those foods comfortably, I think is a good place to start.
Yeah. And I think especially if you're an early riser and you do your training in the morning, I do the majority of my training in the morning as well. And I'm usually out for like 3-4 hours every morning. This was something I struggled with because when I used to do jiu-jitsu, I still do jiu-jitsu, but when I used to do real heavy combat sports, the training would only ever be at max like 90 minutes. And you could probably get away with not putting in too much fuel. And I learned very fast that you can't do that. Like you can't do that. It's too hard to back up sessions. It's too hard to, even if you're doing slow, easy runs, maybe if it's just not worth it for the recovery, like you could get through it, but like higher tempo runs, you're just not going to be able to consistently get your pace unless you are. And training your gut is a real thing. And what we mean when we say that is that when we physically eat food, we break it down, it goes into our stomach. And then when it goes through into our intestine, where we're going to be absorbing most of this, we have physical transporters that are pushing this through and breaking it through and breaking it down and pushing it into our blood. They're actual physical transporters that we need to train and upregulate. In the same way, I always describe to people, like you go to the gym and you do bicep curls, you will eventually break down that muscle, rebuild it to get bigger biceps. And you can do that exact same thing when we say train your gut. So the way that you do it is that you literally just need to practice getting that food in, getting those transporters going and getting used to that. And more than anything, getting used to the feeling of that happening, you know, an hour and a half, 45 minutes, 30 minutes before your session. And then obviously while you're doing it.
Yeah, for sure. And obviously this is something, as you mentioned, you know, you struggled with at the beginning, but you've had no choice but to persevere with. And now, you know, you're hitting 100K distances on a treadmill. But what's the average kind of timeline people should consider in terms of training the gut? You know, like I imagine if I got up, like I'd probably be better at tolerating it than say the person who's just starting out. But, you know, just as a bit of a guide, what do you reckon the timeline to accurately train your gut, so to speak, would be?
Yeah, I don't know if there is like a set number. It's going to be different for everyone. Like you get better with it at times. So I always say to guys, like start straight away. And that could be, it's like anything. It's like you can't expect going into the gym and to be able to increase your, you know, deadlift or bench or whatever very rapidly. It's a slow progressive thing. It's the same thing with training your gut. I think the best way to go about it is kind of to have a pretty good understanding of one, what you're trying to achieve, and then the food amounts that you're trying to get in. So like a lot of my endurance guys will be like, okay, what are you having when you're waking up in the morning? They usually go, okay, I'll have a coffee and then I'll go for a run. It's like, okay, that's fine. Hydration wise, we probably want to be putting in some fluids with some electrolytes, especially if you're going for a longer run. But if you want to get food in, then the priority is going to be that carbohydrate, right? And we know just starting out that 30 grams is probably a good amount. And 30 grams is not that much carbohydrate. It's like a medium banana. It's like 3 pikelets, like depending on the size of the bread, like 2 slices of bread. So you could have a 1 slice of bread with a little bit of honey on there. So it's not a whole lot of food, And then the other component of that, if you want to really get technical, is having a little bit of protein. So I tell a lot of our guys, you know, mix up half a protein shake, or if you can do a fruit smoothie where you can combine the carbs and protein. I find that getting those in liquid form is probably most digestible and most easy first up. And a lot of the guys, because they're used to just say having coffee or water before they go, like they can handle the liquids as it is. But starting to try and hit that number, at least when you start, 30 grams before you go out. And then it's a game of, okay, how long do I need for that to go through my gut? And then can I actually go out and train and not physically be sick or feel like this is detrimental to my training? So maybe the first time you do it, it's 45 minutes before, and then you feel pretty bad. So I always say the guys will like toughen up, buttercup, get up 15 minutes early, because this is important. And then the better you get at it, the closer you can do it to training, and the closer the start time, the more you can sleep in. So I always say to guys, get up, eat this probably about an hour, aim for that 30, go do your warm-ups, go do whatever, and then start your training. But 30 grams is a good starting point, I'd say, for pretty much the majority of people if you've never done this before.
Yeah, no, and that's a good point. And I think, you know, even from personal experience, I probably prefer to train in the afternoon so that I don't have to do that morning thing, is because sometimes I'm lazy and I don't get up early enough to, you know, let my food digest properly. So then sometimes maybe I'm like, oh, I'll just have some train aid, or I'll just have a coffee or something. But I know I always feel way better during my training, whether that's CrossFit or whether that's going for a run or a ride. If I have something and I allow myself that time to digest it, I always ends up better on the back end because I've had that fuel. So I think, yeah, for people who, there's so many people, you know, they wake up and like, oh, I just train fasted, or, you know, I don't wake up enough early enough to eat, or eating before training makes me sick. It's like, okay, well, does eating before training make you sick, or do you just not give yourself enough time to let it digest and to pass through?
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's the biggest key word there is time, right? And I'm saying this because I know a lot of endurance athletes, just from a pragmatic sense, you kind of have to train in the morning, especially if you're doing longer distances. Like a lot of people don't have 3-4 hours to give at the end of a work day. At 5:30, by the time you get home, it's like 6:30. Like it's really not pragmatic to train for 4 hours. And so a lot of them do face this early morning problem. I always say start off at 30 grams, because what we really want to work up to is you want to be working up to getting about 90 grams. So three times that. And then obviously we'll talk about it in a bit, is in your intro training, you want to be getting that almost every hour, if not more. And there's lots and lots of benefits doing that, but it all starts with getting your gut used to handling that, slowly increasing it. Just think the same as what you do when you go to the gym and you're doing biceps or bench or whatever you did when you were 17, 18, trying to get some girlfriends. Do that principle and apply it to training your gut.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, just to clarify, the foods that we're talking about when we are talking about training your gut is those simple carbohydrates. So, you know, if you follow myself or Geordie on Instagram, you know, we're always promoting those simple digesting carbohydrates. So that's, you know, as Geordie mentioned, the white bread and the honey, or maybe some pikelets, or maybe it is a gel, or some lollies, half a banana. So, you know, it's again those key principles of even just pre-training nutrition is avoiding the fiber and the fat, because those are the things that take a while to digest and can sit in your stomach and then result in that stomach upset. So just remembering that when we're talking about intra nutrition, it is those really simple carbohydrates that digest quickly, so our body can utilize that for energy.
Yeah. And I think there's a good point you made too, Loz, is that, you know, I'm talking about early morning rises, but there are people who train in the afternoon. I guess you can talk a bit on that end of, you know, that probably isn't as important than if your training is going to be in the afternoon. You don't have to wake up first thing in the morning, just be smashing pancakes in order to train your gut. You've probably got a bit more leeway there.
Yeah, that's true. And I guess as well, it also depends, yeah, like you said, on the training schedule, because depending on what level of an athlete you are, you might actually be training morning and afternoon to try and fit in the load. So it's like, yeah, if you wake up in the morning, it is super important that you do get that food in. Whereas if you're just training in the afternoon, you know, you've already had a day of eating in the tank to kind of fill up your reserves. So what you have in that initial 45 minutes or so, you know, might just actually be something smaller. But yeah, at the end of the day, it's what's going to work in with your training schedule.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good overview of at least getting your gut used to beforehand. I think another thing to touch on would be hydration. And I think this in the world of endurance sport is very interesting. Like I think you got people like Tim Noakes who talk a lot about, you know, in the early 2000s about being waterlogged and maybe you don't need as much fluid as what you need, and coming back around and saying, well, you know, you probably need to get more of electrolytes and than what we appreciated. And it's now about figuring out how we can physically get that in when you're out sweating, especially in hot, humid environments. what's your thoughts on it, Loz, when it comes to at least hydration before and during your training? What's the best practice that you think?
For sure, yeah. I think hydration is something that's overlooked by a lot of people. And hydration unit doesn't always just mean plain water as well. It does mean, as you mentioned, the electrolytes. And I think hydration, you know, fluid is super important for multiple processes in our body. And one of those things is muscle contraction. So making sure that your body, like your joints and your muscles, are well lubricated before exercise is always going to set you up better than if you go into a training dehydrated. Because as we know, even a slight 2% dehydration is enough to impair physical performance. So I think starting off your training session, say you wake up and you are one of those people that just has a black coffee, don't just have a black coffee, because not that coffee is necessarily dehydrating. It is a bit of a diuretic, so you're going to lose past that water. So making sure you wake up and, you know, maybe you have 600 mils of water or you have 600 mils of Gatorade or something, but just starting that hydration process before you even begin. And that's especially important for those people who do train first thing in the morning, because overnight, you know, that's a long period of time where you're not getting fluids in. So to wake up, have a coffee and go, your body's like a dried out sponge. You know, you need to like replenish the muscles and get that started. And whether that's just with plain water, or if you're going for a long session, you're quite a heavy sweater, adding some electrolytes in is gonna go a long way. But yeah, we can delve into that because you are quite the master of electrolytes.
Yeah, I think it's important to talk about, because I guess up to this point, if we're just covering the most like fundamental concepts of nutrition for endurance, I think carbohydrates and hydration are the two best to start with, because when it comes to performance, there's two big things, especially in endurance, that will limit your performance. And the first one is that you'll physically run out of energy, like you'll run out of energy reserves in your muscle, which will be a stored glycogen, which is a storage form of carbohydrates. So I mean, Loz are saying, you know, when you get up, if you start with more in the system, and again, your day before eating, you're loading up and you've got full muscle glycogen, you're probably going to be in a better state to perform. Again, that depends on what the goals of your training session are. Generally, if you want to feel good and you want to recover well, starting that training session with a good amount of glycogen, keeping some in there, topping up those blood sugar levels, you're going to get a really good result with your training, depending on what your goals are. The other debilitating factor that often stops endurance performance is dehydration. I don't think people really appreciate how all of that works. And the reason that it does work is because we have a big thing in our chest that's beating blood everywhere called your heart. And that's beating blood all over to your working muscles, to your organs. It's delivering oxygen, it's delivering nutrients. It's really, really important. 60% of that blood is fluid. And when we sweat and when we get dehydrated, we lose fluid from the blood. That's called our plasma volume. And that is one of the biggest dictators to our performance. And when we do all of this endurance performance, or you do like exercise in the heat or heat acclimation, you actually get adaptations in your body. And one of the biggest ones, and the first ones your body does, it increases the plasma volume, because the bigger the plasma volume, the more you can exercise and the more efficient. Because you think about it, if you've got thick, gloopy blood and you've got, you're working, you know, really hard running up these mountains or doing whatever, it's going to lead to a catastrophe if you can't get the oxygen and the nutrients to all those working muscles. So your body really, really wants to protect that plasma volume. And the crazy thing is when, like you said, when you wake up in the morning and you get up and you just had an 8-hour fast, you usually wake up, you go to the bathroom, you haven't actually taken in any fluid that entire time. And then people get up, they'll have a black coffee, that's it. And then they'll go train for 2 hours where they're going to be like sweating, some people really profusely. You can get quite dehydrated, and you can hit a point where it's what we call a critical point. And a lot of the research says, you know, 2% dehydration. I think your body can do a lot more than just two. You can probably go 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. You probably go up to 8% dehydration. The thing is like, what's your goals? If your goal is just to go out there and simply just walk and mosey through this workout, then yeah, by all means, don't put any fluid in and just go out and just get dehydrated as shit. But you're not really going to be performing. If your goal is to perform and hit whatever pace you need to hit consistently, you need to keep that dehydration, you know, within that 1 to 2, maybe 3% body weight loss. And the best way to do that is to start your session in this hydrated state, especially if you're an early riser and you're getting these long runs in and you wake up and you're already in a state of dehydration. Getting that fluid and getting that electrolytes in to increase that plasma volume is going to be really, really important to make sure that you can get the most out of that training.
Yeah, for sure. And I think another thing as well is during exercise, sometimes you can't always rely on just your thirst. because, you know, especially if you're on the bike, obviously you're riding, you've got wind coming at you, you're sweating, but at the same time it's evaporating. So, you know, you could look at yourself and think, oh, I don't even look like I'm sweating, or I'm not losing that much fluid, especially even when you're swimming. Obviously you're covered in water, you'd have no idea. But I think another thing is, like, just because you can't see it doesn't mean, you know, you're not losing that fluid. It's super important to always replace it. And, you know, it's the same with not just having water, as you've mentioned, with electrolytes. We don't just sweat out water. You know, we sweat out sodium, we sweat out potassium, and all those electrolytes are so essential for, you know, nerve signaling, and, you know, contraction and all of those things. So if you're not just only sweating out fluid and electrolytes, and you're not even starting with any of that in your system, you're just starting and you're just depleting throughout your sessions.
Yeah, it's two good points there. And I think the first one is that thermoregulation is a big thing, right? Like, when we're talking about things that are very debilitating to endurance performance, a lot of it is overheating. Like, a lot of athletes really struggle with what we call hypothermia, which is overheating. And the way that our body regulates our body temperature is through sweating. Like you said, it's either through running in the wind, where you get that cool wind physically cooling your skin temperature, or it's that sweat evaporating off your skin. But that sweat that goes onto your skin is coming from your blood. And like I said, that plasma volume is what's supplying that. And once we go down on that, and that starts going down, it also affects our body's ability to thermoregulate or regulate that heat. So if you're thinking about longer, even training sessions, races, when you're going for a couple hours, if you're not putting that fluid back in, you're not going to be able to regulate that heat. And you've got a good chance of overheating, which can have a whole host of health problems or performance problems down the track. The other part of that is the electrolytes, right? And a lot of people make this mistake. A lot of people. It's known about a lot more in the endurance community because they talk about it, because the risk of hyponatremia. And there's been incidences where marathon runners have run and they've just put in water. And for exactly the reasons that Loz described, when you're just putting in water, you're not actually replacing the electrolytes that were lost in the sweat. That can cause what we call swelling in our body, like water swelling. And it can actually cause your cells and your organs, such as your brain, to swell up, and you can unfortunately drop into a coma and even die. And we've seen that happen when athletes are running, sweating profusely, losing salts, and all they're putting back in their body is just plain water without the electrolytes. It throws off the osmotic gradients and the salt gradients in our body. You can unfortunately die. That's why it's so important for everyone to have an electrolyte and a hydration strategy, even if you're just pretty casual at this, like, especially if you live in Australia where we live, and in Queensland where it's pretty hot most of the year. And if you're out for a couple of hours, you're going to be sweating and you're going to be losing a lot of salt. Some people are what we call low salt sweaters and others are high salt sweaters. You can go to a lot of, you know, fancy labs or get someone to test that for you. But generally you will know. And some of the ways that you'll know is that, like, if you've got sweat dripping down your face, you got any abrasions or cuts, or even if it gets in your eyes, it's quite stingy. We all know those salty people that have the salt marks all around their hats and shirts. After, some people just don't have that. If you find after you train and you go to a cafe and all the dogs want to come lick you, it's probably because you're a salty sweater and they're licking the salt. So having an understanding where you sit on that is going to be important, because that's going to help you determine your hydration and electrolyte strategy. Because same as with your carbohydrates, when you're putting these in routinely throughout your training or your race or whatever it is, you need to be replacing this hydration and electrolytes and getting them back in. Not so much. I'm not going to say that you have to do it one-to-one for exactly what you lose, because you've got a bit of a leeway. Your body can operate at a certain level of dehydration to a really high amount, but there's a critical point that you want to stop your body hitting, because from that critical point onward, you're going to see real detriments to your performance if you don't keep up with it.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, I think it's super important for anyone listening to take, if anything, they take this away from the podcast, because hydration is one of the most simple, but I think one of the most kind of beneficial practices that you can implement into not only your training, but obviously your race day plans. And I think, you know, with carbohydrates, which we can go back on, you know, there's kind of some pretty solid numbers that you should aim for. But when it comes to electrolytes, you know, it's kind of like, oh, how many, like, you know, how much should I be aiming to have per hour? And, you know, I've looked into it, and some research says, you know, between 400 to 600 milligrams of sodium per hour, which, if you think, you know, the Australian kind of recommended intake is around 2,300 milligrams a day. You're doing an Ironman, you know, say you're out there for, I don't know, if you're a top dog, you know, 8 hours, you know, 8 times 6, you know, I'm not going to do maths right now, but that's an insane amount of sodium that you're getting in. And I think all of the things that you just mentioned, Geordie, in terms of trying to determine your own sweat rate, if you are a salty sweater or you're not very salty sweater, can all contribute, because at the end of the day, I think it's a very individualized and personal kind of number that you should be aiming for in terms of trying to replenish those stores. Whereas with carbohydrates, I feel like because of the research, you know, it's a little bit more kind of set in those numbers that gives you a guide. Are there any kind of sodium, you know, ranges that you've heard of or that you've had worked for you? Or do you kind of just make up a train aid and just go for it?
Yeah, I definitely don't wing it. I used to just wing it and it doesn't end well, especially it's fine. I found that if you're doing anything, say like 3-4 hours at a moderate intensity, say if I'm on the trails or mountains or even on the road for like 3-4 hours and you're like sitting around that like 65-70% VO2 and you'd like, you can probably get away with not so much completely winging it, but not really being dialed in with your sodium and just having a few scoops of whatever. When you're out there for longer, when you're going into those 5, 6, 7, 8 hours, or you're putting in fast paced efforts for, say, you want to do like a timed practice for what you at your marathon pace or whatever, and say you run in marathon pace at 3:30 or somewhere lower or a bit higher than that, you're going to be profusely sweating while you're doing that. That's when it's important. You kind of got to really get it dialed in, but more so for those long, long, long sessions where you're 4, 5 plus 6 hours when you're out there. I find that a lot of people don't appreciate how much salt they actually lose. Like you said, even 400 to 600 milligrams is what we call a low salt sweater, which isn't that many people. Most people that I've tested personally are somewhere between that 1,000 to 1,500 milligram mark, and that's per hour. Now, you need to appreciate that as your body gets more dehydrated, as it goes on, you're going to lose less sweat and you'll actually lose less fluid as you get more dehydrated. So a lot of endurance athletes make the mistake of thinking, okay, I need to have 2 liters every single hour. But as you're progressively getting a little bit more dehydrated, and you want to try and match those as close as you can, but you're not going to be sweating 2 liters every single hour, especially once you get past that like 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 hour mark, it's going to slow down a bit. You need to be aware of that, but you need to do some trial and error with one, your sodium, and two, like how that sodium sits in your gut. Because the thing about sodium, it's what we call osmotically active. And you might listen to me say, and you think, okay, Loz, you're a real high salty sweater. So you go, hey, I'm going to go get a bunch of train aid and I'm going to six scoop that stuff and get a lot of salt in there. And you go out on your run and you start putting that in. And because it's so salty and it's probably you've put too much salt than what you've lost in your system, instead of pushing fluid from your intestines into your blood where you want it to go, you can actually do the opposite and you can pull fluid from your intestines back in your stomach. And a lot of people have probably experienced this playing around with electrolytes when you're in training, is that you're sipping and then you just go, oh crap, like figuratively and literally, oh crap, you've got to get to a toilet because you're going to get that osmotic diarrhea. So I think it's just really, if you don't want to go get salt sweat tested and you don't want to figure out how much salt you're actually losing where you can individualize it, you're going to have to do that trial and error. And I think it's definitely easier to start lower. So start at those lower ranges, try, get a product that you've got 500 milligrams, put it in a liter of fluid, go out there, see what your sweat rate is. I think that's important. Like we're talking about this, but figure out what your sweat rate is per hour. Simply just weigh yourself before and after an hour training session, figure it out. And then once you're replacing it, see how your stomach feels. Because again, we're talking about training your gut with your carbohydrates, the exact same with this, with your fluid and getting all of this in. So yeah, I would start low, 500 milligrams per hour, and then start building up and you'll feel it. If you're not getting this right, like some of the common things that happen, cramps, you get this overall feeling of fatigue, you know, the work just seems so much harder. You're not so much holding the fluid. If you find that you're stopping a lot or you need to urinate and you just keep peeing, you're putting fluid in, you keep peeing, that's a sign that you're losing too much salt and you're not replacing enough, because you should be holding that in. Or if your urine is really, really dark, you're probably not getting enough salt in with your fluids because you're not holding it in, it's not retaining it, or you're just too dehydrated and you stuffed up quite a long time ago. So there's a lot of considerations, but start low and build yourself up, because it's one of the easiest things outside of what your carbohydrates, one of the easiest things that you can do that you will feel an immediate benefit if you get it right.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think really good point that you mentioned before in terms of just going in and making this really concentrated kind of electrolyte supplement, because that's as well, you know, if you're in the sports store, you're trying to get gels or juices or whatever, and it says like isotonic fluid or hypertonic fluid, you know, you might look at that and be like, what the heck does that mean? Okay, cool, just going to buy it. And you know what you just explained before in terms of six scoops, you know, and then I start feeling sick, you know, that's what we would call a hypertonic solution, where the solution of what you're drinking is actually, you know, more concentrated than what's inside your body. So as you mentioned, as a result, it has to pull, and that can make you feel quite sick. So it's, you know, if you're ever out there trying to buy a supplement, you know, a hypertonic solution might be something more like a Lucozade, which is really concentrated, or, you know, even like a milk or a milkshake. And they're the types of things you probably don't want to be putting into your body while you're exercising, because it's going to throw off the balance and make you feel like what you were mentioning, like a bit bloated and everything like that. So you want to go for something that has more of a similar solution to your blood. So it kind of, you know, in terms of like its osmolality, the concentration isn't that different that it's going to cause this shift inside.
Yeah, yeah. And just for everyone that we just confused the crap out of then, you'll see these three terms thrown around: hypotonic, isotonic, and hypertonic. So like what we're talking about, these hypertonic drinks are ones that are way more concentrated, like Loz says, like your Lucozades, Gatorades, you know, even your pops and soft drinks are going to be way more concentrated, and they're going to be those hypertonic. And isotonic is theoretically, it's meant to be the concentration of your sweat, which we know for every person is going to be very different. So does a true isotonic product exist? I don't really know. Maybe in the thereabouts.
Maybe they're going to be like, it can be a personalized electrolyte supplement to your osmolality.
But then what Loz is talking about is those hypotonic oral rehydration solutions. They're things like your Train Aids, your Pedialyte, your Hydralyte, your liquid IVs, drip drop, all of those things. They're really, really good at promoting that extra fluid to get back into where you want in the fluid compartments that are really important when you're training. So for everyone, we're just confused there. There's your little fluid compartment 101 science lesson.
Yeah, sorry about that. Maybe I need to take my glasses off here so I can actually start concentrating. I'm just going into I feel like I'm sleeping now because it's so dark.
Yeah, I think that's pretty good though. Just for an introduction, two key fundamental principles there. We'll get into this a lot more in other podcasts. We'll break this down. We'll go down the numbers. But I think if you're an endurance athlete and you just want somewhere to start with your nutrition, I think those are two really powerful, important things: training your gut and then your hydration. You can talk about so many other things, and we'll do podcast episodes where we talk about when you're in your training and how to pace these, and what's the rate of fluid you should be getting in, what's the rate of carbohydrates, how much total carbohydrates should you be aiming to get at X, Y, and Z time frames. And then if you put that into the ultra space, how much can you be getting in, when should you switch from solid fluids or solid foods to liquid food, or when do you, you know, change your hydration products during a race, or whatever it is. We'll get into all of that. But I think if you're just starting and you're just like, or even if you're in it now and you're like, shit, I haven't been taking my nutrition nearly as serious as what I should be. Start with this. Start with training your gut. Like we said, get those carbohydrates in before. It'll be tough depending on where you're at with it. Start with 30 grams, get on MyFitnessPal, figure out how much of your favorite foods you can have is 30 grams. Keep it to what we call those simple carbohydrates, things like your fruits and faster digesting or high glycemic carbs. And then really get on top of your hydration. Look at preloading some sodium. Make sure you're starting your exercise in a state of euhydration or hydration. So you make sure your pee is clear. Make sure you've had fluid if you're waking up, or even at the end of the day, make sure you're putting it in. And start there. And even during your session, I would say stay on top of your hydration and immediately after weigh yourself so you can see how much you have to put in. Because I think whenever you finish exercise, the first thing you should be doing is rehydrating. It's very, very important. A lot of people don't do it, and you definitely should be. But they're two really, really good things that we should be starting at.
Absolutely. I totally agree with you. And I think that's a really good place to start, because, you know, endurance nutrition is, especially if you're getting into it, you know, it's a totally different space. It's a totally different world, especially if, you know, maybe you're used to doing 45 minute, you know, strength and conditioning class, going to maybe getting on the bike for 2 hours at a time. Your fueling needs are so different, and it can be hard to try and understand, oh my gosh, where do I start? Or how do I get these, you know, these nutrients in whilst I'm exercising? And that's what, you know, we can go into a bit more detail and guidance, and over a couple of podcasts is kind of helping you to fuel during your training, because, you know, without a doubt, that can be really challenging to eat whilst exercising or to drink whilst exercising. And, you know, come race day, you don't want to have to be stressing or thinking too much about getting X, Y, and Z. And you want to go into that event or even that training session with a really solid plan, so that it kind of takes the guesswork out of it. And you know that you're setting yourself up with enough fuel in the tank, you know, like you'd fill up your car. You're just filling up your body, because at the end of the day, when it comes to endurance, your body is the engine. So having that fuel in the tank ready to go, and we can, yeah, hopefully equip you with some of those skills to fuel your endurance endeavors, whether that's a sprint try or an ultra, it's important.
Yeah, it's a good point. I had a client, a long-term client, who was a fighter, and then she decided to get into endurance. I think because we're pretty good friends, she got very competitive with me when I got into it.
I hope she
ran her first. Yeah, but she does wear speedies, actually. And she did her first marathon, but I hadn't heard from her for a while. And she messaged me a week out and said, hey, by the way, can I just get a quick marathon plan off you? And I said, absolutely not, because this is something you need to train for a good amount of time. Whatever you've been doing, just do that. That's going to be your best bet. You should have got onto this about 12 weeks ago, but whatever. I won't hold that against you. We'll prep for your next one.
For sure.
And she went all right. But the first thing she said afterwards is she goes, yeah, you're right. Like, I absolutely need to get a fueling plan. Like, I need something beforehand. I need to have something way more solid so I rock up feeling my best. And then she's like, I hit the wall at 30Ks, which is pretty common in a marathon. If you don't carb load and you don't fuel up properly, most people get a really tough bonk at about 31, 32 kilometers. And she said, yeah, I just absolutely need to get on to, you know, how do I split up my carbohydrates? How do I get my hydration in throughout? How much electrolytes do you have? And it's something you just got to go over. You got to plan out, and then you just got to practice. And you just got to practice it in your long training runs, your marathon pace, or whatever your training pace, competition pace sessions. You just got to train it. You got to practice it, and it'll take time. Even if you've got all the numbers right, doing it is a completely other thing. And then you encounter all of these things. Oh, what if it's a lot hotter of a day? What if it's hammering down rain? How do I change all of these strategies if this is happening? So we'll go into all of that. I think this is a really good spot to start. Training your gut, hydration, two very, very, very simple things, but two very, very impactful things that you can do right now if you're an endurance athlete.
Absolutely. And I think a third bonus takeaway is if, say, for example, you might be listening to this and you're about to compete on the weekend, please don't change anything immediately before your event, because, yeah, it could end up not very good. And then you'll be like, oh, I listened to this podcast, they were meant to be giving out good tips, and I felt like shit. So yeah, train your gut, stay on top of your hydration, and don't do anything new on game day. And to be honest, that goes for any sport. Never change your plan on the comp day.
Yeah, never try anything new game day. That is number one, numero uno, do not do. But anyway, Lods, let's wrap it up there.
Absolutely.
Number one of what will be a pretty extensive little list about endurance sports, but let's wrap that up. Thanks, Lods.
Thanks, Geordie.
And there it is, another episode of the TFD Performance Podcast. Stay tuned for our upcoming series into all things endurance nutrition, where we will cover everything you need to know to make sure that you smash your next race. This podcast will be available through the podcast app, iTunes, Spotify, YouTube, and if you follow along with our socials, @the_fightdietitian, you can see all of the best bits from the podcast episode. Thanks for listening in, and I'll see you guys for the next episode of the TFD Performance Podcast.